This is WBAI New York, where you have been listening to a rebroadcast of the evening news. My name is Robert Knight, inviting you to stay tuned for Earthwatch. Extraordinary developments are taking place, and in tonight's program, we will have some very special announcements, as well as a Robert Knight Earth Mix in regard to recent events in Indiana, and your phone calls, too. So stay tuned. Earthwatch is coming up.
And it is now time for Earthwatch.
you, Steveland Morris. This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight, and in tonight's program, we will consider issues of life and death by way of your comments, as well as a special Earthwatch mix, or I call it an Earth mix, in regard to serious events that took place this week. But first, I have an extraordinary announcement. I have been informed by unofficial but highly reliable multiple sources that the chair of the Pacifica National Board, David Acosta, and Berkeley Station KPFA National Board member Carolyn Van Putten have resigned from the Pacifica National Governing Board. They have been part of or associated with the non-dissident faction of the Pacifica Board and follow the recent resignation of Michael Palmer, who you might recall 2 years earlier misdirected an email to the public to then-chair and continuing advisor to the National Board, Mary Frances Berry, advocating the sale of WBAI and KPFA radio stations. To repeat, I've been informed by multiple highly reliable and unofficial sources that David Acosta, the chair of the Pacifica National Board, and KPFA National Board member Carolyn Van Putten have joined Michael Palmer in the corporatist exodus from the Pacifica National Governing Board. I'm Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch.
Are you
This is Earthwatch repeating a major development, the resignation from the Pacifica National Board of Chair David Acosta and KPFA National Member Carolyn Van Putten following the resignation of Michael Palmer. This breaking today, we are informed by multiple highly reliable sources. Gonna win. Well, you gotta put those glasses down and stop that dancing.
Explain.
And just to recap, if you're just joining Earthwatch, we have word of the resignations of David Acosta from the chairmanship of the Pacifica National Governing Board, along with KPFA National Board member Carolyn Van Putten. They, like the recently resigned Michael Palmer, have been associated with the corporate impulse or the non-dissident impulse in regard to the tradition and future of the five radio stations of the Pacific Network, which includes stations in Houston, Washington, D.C., Berkeley, California, and Los Angeles, California. So there is apparently a corporatectomy taking place at board level within the Pacifica Foundation. I'm Robert Knight, and this is Earthwatch. And later on, we'll be taking calls at 212-209-2900. But there's overriding sense of death. There, in fact, in just a few days, yet another federal prisoner is scheduled to be executed. And I thought we would spend a few minutes thinking about that by way of this Earth mix that I prepared in regard to trying to sort out some of my own thoughts and sharing and including the sounds of others in regard to what is it that has died with Timothy McVeigh? Have parts of us? Where does it go? And will we be able to see through the obvious points of the case to find a truer meaning of life, death, justice, race, and such in America today? So I'm Robert Knight. You're listening to Earthwatch. We'll take phone calls in a short time, but I'd like to just present this also for your consideration. I think the flow hopefully shall speak for itself. Some thoughts and sounds in regard to the first federal execution since 1963 in the United States of America. This is Earthwatch.
And he's 6 feet 4. He fights with missiles and with fear. He's all 31 and he's only 70. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA, and he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. And he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy. He's fighting for the red. He stands for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die. And he never sees the writing on the wall. But what about him? Hitler has condemned him at the hound. Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon to the war. And without him, all his killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. But his orders come from far away, no more.
Timothy McVeigh met his death at 8:14 this morning in silence, leaving instead a handwritten copy of a 19th century Victorian poem as his final statement. The poem was written by William Ernest Henley, whose painful long-term case of tubercular arthritis and loss of a lower leg inspired the character of Long John Silver in Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island. Henley's poem, Invictus, and McVeigh's statement read in part, "Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. And in the fell clutch of circumstance I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance my head is bloody, but unbowed." Neither unbowed was President George W. Bush, officiating today over the first federal execution since 1963. This morning, Bush spoke not of the 152 executions he approved as governor of Texas, but of the 168 killed in Oklahoma City.
Final punishment of the guilty cannot alone bring peace to the innocent. It cannot recover the loss or balance the scales, and it is not meant to do so. Today, every living person who was hurt by the evil done in Oklahoma City can rest in the knowledge that there has been a reckoning.
Additional days of reckoning loom, however, for federal death row inmate Juan Raul Garza, also scheduled for execution in Terre Haute, Indiana, next Tuesday, as well as 716 more people scheduled for state-level executions. Most of these are people of color or poverty with widespread racial and geographic disparities acknowledged in a Justice Department study conducted as recently as September. Nevertheless, Attorney General John Ashcroft gave little hope for federal death penalty reform under the Bush administration when he made the extraordinary claim on June 6th that, in his opinion, black and Hispanic defendants are less likely to be subjected to the death penalty than white defendants. Thus, in the aftermath of today's execution, it was left to McVeigh attorney Robert Nye to delineate the unlikely common interest between a 33-year-old white man obsessed with revenge for lethal federal actions at Ruby Ridge and Waco, and the disproportionately black, Latino, and poor population of the nation's death rows.
Where we go from here is a question of critical importance. I have told you, honestly, that Tim cared for people. And some of the people he cared deepest about were his brothers on the federal death row. Even Tim recognized that our claims that we are not racially biased are false. If we believe that, then we ignore the reality that 18 of the 20 men behind me on the federal death row in Terre Haute are persons of color. Fully 90% belong to a minority. If we do not acknowledge that, we are lying to ourselves about what we are doing. We are killing the poor and the minority and people that we believe to be different and lesser than ourselves. Even in Tim McVeigh's case, to which the racial disparity doesn't apply, we were incapable of inflicting the death penalty in a fair manner. The FBI could not participate in the prosecution without breaching its obligation to turn over the witness statements. This must make us realize that we are too fallible. We are simply too human to extract so final and irreversible a punishment. If there is anything good that can come from the execution of Tim McVeigh, it may be to help us realize sooner that we simply cannot do this anymore. I am firmly convinced that it is not a question of if we will stop. It is simply a question of when.
That was Timothy McVeigh attorney Robert Nye, and I'm Robert Knight for the WBAI Evening News.
Those of the night that cover me.
Americans loved the Gulf War veteran Timothy McVeigh. while Mr. McVeigh bombed and executed the people of Iraq in what was called the Gulf War, he was a hero, a defender of democracy, a defender of freedom. It mattered not to Americans then how many innocent civilians were bombed in the Gulf War. To many Americans, the military and the U.S. government, those civilians bombed in Iraq were simply collateral damage. Americans now recall that McVeigh's referring to the 168 people he killed in Oklahoma City as collateral damage. Ironically, we felt no disgust when the U.S. military and the U.S. government referred to the people of Iraq and others in the same manner. As long as it was happening to someone else's children, someone else's people, it was okay. Now that the chicken has come home to roost, we become horrified. I, in no way, condone the actions of Timothy McVeigh, no more than I condone the bombings committed by Americans, including Timothy McVeigh, against innocent civilians in Iraq. And no more than I condone the U.S. sanctions, which have killed more than 500,000 children in the ongoing war against the people of Iraq. Simply put, Timothy McVeigh was a product of the U.S. military, and by extension, the U.S. government, and by extension, the American people. Americans would like to make believe that Timothy McVeigh was an anomaly. I won't. Timothy McVeigh was bred by the U.S. military and the U.S. government as a weapon of mass destruction. That we should not forget. No doubt, there are those who will celebrate his death, just as there are others, like this writer, who will mourn the death of Timothy McVeigh in the same manner as I mourn for the victims of Oklahoma City and the victims of Iraq. My tears are further fueled by a realization that Timothy McVeigh was a product of our vengeful society, our sometimes murderous country. And as McVeigh met his fate, I would argue that the poem he chose as his last words is a reflection of a soul bred by the U.S. military and the U.S. government. That poem reads in part, "Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank the U.S. military, my words of course, for my unconquerable soul." It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Rest in peace, Timothy McVeigh, like Bob Carey and many others. You were made in America. This is Prisoner X.
Without him, how could Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war. And without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war.
Those of the night that cover me. Black as the pit from pole to pole. I thank whatever God may be. For my unconquerable soul. In the clutch of circumstance.
Earthwatch on WBAI New York. My name is Robert Knight. That Earthwatch mix included the Gregorianesque a cappella singing of the poem Invictus. And I'm sure you might want to know that it's performed by a group called Kickshaw, an a cappella band originating in the Seattle, Washington area. In addition to my own report and Prisoner X's commentary from the evening news, you also heard music in the form of the song Universal Soldier, first by Buffy St. Marie, and then by The Highwaymen. Some of you may be more familiar with the popular version that was also recorded by Donovan. Recapping breaking development this very evening, just a short time ago, I was informed by unofficial but highly reliable sources, multiple sources in fact, that David Acosta, the chair of the Pacific National Board, and KPFA National Board member Carolyn Van Putten have resigned from the board, along with the recent resignation of Michael Palmer, who advocated the sale of KPFA and WBAI. In communication that was intended for continuing board consultant Mary Frances Berry, there appears to be an exodus of members who have been what might politely be termed of non-dissident philosophies in regard to what is happening at the stations across the nation. One description might have it as a corporatectomy in progress, the removing of corporate philosophies from this free speech, listener-sponsored radio non-commercial network. You know, I've been asked to be a subject in, well, actually, several documentaries and films that are being made about this radio station, WBAI Pacifica. And one of the things the director asked me to be prepared for was to talk about, among other things, the coverage that at a certain time this radio station was able to provide a freewheeling base for, with the work I have the privilege to do in regard to Panama, along with Dennis Bernstein when we were doing Contragate Undercurrents. And, I went in deep into spy land, into confidential sources, and people making mystery visits to impart information. Something that they might not have done if they knew they'd be on camera, and that those materials could be stored and possibly subpoenaed. Well, there's a lot of activity around here these days. They're installing cameras. They're preparing the passbooks. Setting up the office microphones. Laying the landmines around the perimeter. And installing the cranium chips. And it's possible that we may soon see the day when, as we are injected with mind-numbing substances and philosophies, that on the verge of our symbolic collective demise, we might look up into the ceiling and see not the eyes of those observing us in our times of turmoil, but only a camera mounted in the ceiling. My name is Robert Knight. This is Earthwatch. And I wonder, who watches the watchers? And who talks to the talker? The phone number here is area code 212-209-2900. Wondering about your thoughts as we consider the meaning and symbology of the life and death of Timothy McVeigh, the 168 killed in the bombing that he is said to have been a part of, 168 people who died there, the wife of the gentleman at Ruby Ridge, nearly as many people killed at Waco, but we don't see Janet Reno being strapped into a gurney. That ought to be enough for you to talk about this night. This is Earthwatch, and this night is Robert Knight. The phone number is area code 212-209-2900, and you're on the air.
Hey, Robert, this is Astro. I'm very concerned about what I heard about 65,000 people being arrested in New York City by the Giuliani administration there, and the charges being dropped on 40,000 of them. And I think that isn't democracy, that's a type of fascism.
Okay, let me respond to that. That was the subject of a news story I did earlier today. And there were 65,000 people who were automatically strip-searched by the Giuliani regime during the mayor's directed processing of people through central booking for the most trivial of infractions. All of those people were notified legally of their possibility to file a claim in the class action lawsuit. Of those who were notified, approximately 6,000 to 7,000 of them have taken full availability of it, with awards that could range from $250 to 100 times that much. And for those who may have received such a notice, there is an extension of the deadline to confirm participation to July 31st, and Richard Emery's law firm is involved in that. This is Earthwatch. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Robert, I applaud the beautiful news you brought, and what an extraordinary program you have just created. Just absolutely a classic. And so are you. And I'll say good night.
Aw, shucks. Yeah, the classics are made with real sugar. This is Earthwatch. You're on the air.
Well, hi. Yes, I'm calling from Ulster County, and I was away all winter, and I learned all I knew, really, about what was going on with the Pacific.
Okay, a federal official took over the Pacific Financial Board, then they brought a corporate, but then the people fought back, and then we went, and then some of them are going.
All right.
While you were out.
Yes, it sounds like the world turned over there, and I gotta say, I learned from the late night people, and one of them suddenly seems like they joined the other side, and I'm kind of wondering, what, is it really just a bunch of old people that need to be pushed off the bridge, or is there something
on
there?
Well, you know, people ask me about those who have taken part in national repressive activities, and they say, what happened to such people?
Yeah.
You know what I tell them? Nothing.
Yeah. Well, is there any hope that Utrice might resign at some point? Or
I think I have spoken sufficiently.
But she sort of convinced me that people like Mumia Abu-Jamal are white racists.
I don't want to make this a specific personal thing about Utrice or any other individual,
right,
because this is a collective situation in which strength of mind is more important than transient power of individuals. Let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead and finish your point, and then I'll conclude.
Well, I just remember, like, way back in the 60s, there were people that were really sort of, it turned out later, you know, with the COINTELPRO, that were, like, convincing anyone in the struggle that wasn't actually, like, totally out there picking up the gun, particularly, like, maybe white people that might have been sympathetic. They were just as bad as George Wallace and therefore should just go home and forget everything. And I sort of hear that same tone coming out of certain voices at BAI.
I feel your pain.
And I
do have some thoughts about that. Let me take a run at it, all right?
What is happening with Lumia anyway?
That's a lot.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay. It's, to me, as a person with historic, noble, and educated heritage of Africans in America, it is painful and astonishing to see some of the race baiting that has been taking place. As a person and part of a family informed by many kinds of genes and reaching with roots through the beginning of humanity on this earth, I do not choose to define myself as the ever-recovering victim of a historical anomaly of unequaled horror, which is the Middle Passage in slavery in this continent. It is an Afro-Holocaust, and yet, those who have lived, survived, and been remembered through that are stronger than their oppressors. So I find it very dismaying to see the unevolved reaction to that, where one permanently defines oneself in reaction to that behavior and treatment, and the remnant racism that, of course, is at issue. I mean, do we not talk about it on death row? Do we not talk about it with the Rockefeller Joint? Do we not talk about it? Do we not fight it? Do we not incrementally and radically change and advance that? So I've been disappointed with some of the representations that have been made in that way, some of which seem to me like darkness masquerading as blackness. Yeah, that's right. Darkness masquerading as blackness. If I get scratched on the ankle by a kitty cat, do I spend the rest of my life tracking, hunting, and hating that cat? Or do I behave within my own nobility? See, I think that's a fundamental question that has to be asked, particularly when you have those of that other philosophy referring to white chicks. Referring to their own colleagues as white chicks. You know, I don't think that's right. I don't think that is proper evolved African behavior. So that's what I think about that. This is Earthwatch, where we never lie on the air. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. While we're talking about all these race issues, I thought that I'll raise one, which is this Saturday, we were in Bushwick, leaving on Bushwick Avenue, getting onto Jackie Robinson Highway. And guess what? It's the first time I've ever seen this. It was a license check. And it was just amazing. I mean, I can understand. This is the way, I guess, Giuliani is fighting folks of color. This is his other form of racial profiling that we don't necessarily hear of.
Absolutely.
But it's happening right there. And the cop that stopped us, you know, was European-American. And we told him, would you do this on the Upper East Side? And he said, I'm just following orders. And then the second reaction was, well, it's not nothing to do with race here. You know, we're just doing what we're told to do. And no, it's not race. We don't see it that way. So I just wanted to see if you could comment on that.
Yes, it is a part of the Giuliani regime. It was about 3 or 4 years ago that, to the dismay of many police captains and higher professional officials within the department, that he ordered them to take everybody through central booking. It has always been my belief that it's part of a larger plan to do data tracking, fingerprint, DNA if possible. Remember, the other police commissioner was saying he wanted that. Basically, Giuliani wants to tag and bag people of color so that they can be, by having been arrested or been encountered with the law enforcement system, that for the rest of their lives, they can use racism to try and control their access through the official documents that they build up. And apparently, because of the righteous anger, actions, and response that have been generated by things like this radio station has historically been, it is being exposed. The police department on Friday nights gasses up their vans and goes on safari to look for people to put into the jail for 3 days, because over the weekend, the cops can keep you locked up for three
right.
days without a judicial adjudication.
Mm-hmm. So you can rot away for the weekend.
So since, you know, we've helped focus attention on that, now, you know, they're taking the safari elsewhere. I'm very sorry that you experienced that. But remember, you are greater than the ones doing that. And there are an extraordinary number of police who hate Giuliani's bleeping guts.
But, yeah, and then they just feel like, oh, we're just doing our job.
Mm.
But on another note, you know...
I'd like to keep it brief because everybody's calling. Go ahead.
The announcement that you just made in reference to those guys resigning and so on. I mean, if we have a show like the morning shows that we had with Bernard and yourself and... Amy and, you know, Sharon Hopper and all of those guys, at least you would have brought that voice. I don't see that happening. Maybe it is, maybe because I've stopped listening to the morning shows that diligently or religiously. So,
well, I can't comment intelligently on that because I wouldn't know what happens on the morning show.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. This is Earthwatch. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. When you read Invictus the first time that I heard it a few days ago, there was a phrase in, maybe the last line, which sounded like a mistake. Your delivery was so smooth and flawless that you didn't falter at all. So I'd like to mention the phrase, and maybe I'm just not understanding it. The phrase was, find and shall find.
I do not have the poem in front of me, but... my recollection of the sense of that quatrain was that he was using the verb parallelishly in the present and the future perfect tense.
Okay.
It finds and will have found me.
Oh, excuse me. Then I misheard it. It's find and will have found me.
Yes.
Oh, I misheard it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, Gosh, well, thank you for being so polite.
Okay.
Yeah, I was scared.
Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes.
You and I sat near, I don't even recall if it was next to each other or near each other, in a Music 101 course at CCNY at the South Campus.
Oh, my
dear God. That's right.
Drop me a note. I'd like to remember who you are.
What?
Drop me a note here.
Really?
Yeah, 120 Wall Street, WBAI, Robert Knight.
I will do that.
Oh.
I'll just say hello.
Light is good.
Do you remember anything from the course? Beethoven, maybe?
I learned something about harmony.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. This is Earthwatch, and your music to my ears.
Hi, Robert. It was wonderful to hear the news tonight. And I wanted to
Will win?
Excuse me?
I just said, who will win?
No, the news that you gave this tonight.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was very good. Now, I wanted to talk about the execution. And I hate to say that I saw a parallel from the people who suffered from the bombing, the relatives, the bloodthirstiness of their attitude, to me, seemed very similar to what had driven McVeigh to do this in the first place. He claims it was because of the killing that was done originally, and they kill him for the same thing. When does it stop?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you've hit the essence of it. If the behavior is the same between antagonists in such a passionate and tragic encounter, is not there some common identity?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And the other thing that worries me about capital punishment is the corruption that it does to everyone who carries it out.
Mm, much less those hypocritical Hippocratics.
Except for Bush. Bush cannot be touched by anything. He's,
well, I'm talking about the
he's so corrupt.
I'm talking about the doctors who inject and facilitate the poison. Did you know that potassium chloride was injected into a woman in Texas accidentally? And in her death throes, she said that it burnt like hell. It was like lava going through the veins. It is an it is analogous and not unrelated to how if you scrape your knuckle and then put salt on it, rub salt into the wound, you see how excruciatingly painful that becomes? Imagine that coursing throughout the insides of your body. Now, what they do is first they introduce a tranquilizer and a muscle relaxant. You know, that tranquilizer is not and cannot make the victim more calm. It can alter his or her external behavior. But tranquilizing the victim of this death penalty torture is for the benefit of, like you say, those victims who had it on HBO.
Well, he's not unconscious?
Well, there is an attorney I spoke with in Washington whose name escapes me at the moment who witnessed such an execution, and he said right down to the end there was fear, trembling, anxiety, and pain, despite what they used as a Valium injection to go along with the heart-stopping, excruciatingly painful potassium chloride. So
the whole process is torture.
There's
the
one other
process.
Thing that in monitoring the McVeigh execution, many of the witnesses said that near the end, they said it was as if he had come to closure and let out a final breath. Ha! You know, as if it was like Allen Ginsberg. Ha! It is done. You know, no. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not what that was. What happens at the end of this torture is that the lungs collapse. And the collapsing of the lungs is what causes the outgassing that these fools were describing as a poetic last breath. I gotta go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good night.
This is Earthwatch. I'm Robert Knight, and you are on the air. Hello.
Hello. I have some suggestions about your show. You could improve it greatly if we had a little more Deepak Chopra and a little spiritual healing and maybe another Course in Miracles just to sort of go with the morning show.
Lady, if you don't think this is spiritual healing, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
It's a joke.
I know that.
They need more. Would they bring on the other people? It's painful. I actually listen to Ron Kuby in the morning.
Oh.
And then you can curse at him, whatever, but I mean, at least it moves. It's just like Novocaine. It's really bad.
Well, let's see. You've actually talked for seconds now without using the word positive.
I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, get better soon. Thanks
okay.
so much.
Bye.
This is Earthwatch, and you are on the air.
Yes, this is Rashida, and I want to make a shita.
Oh, how clever. You're on the air.
Hi, Robert.
Yes.
Vis-a-vis the station, the slicks always slip on their own slime. I talked to you a while back before the Christmas meltdown, and I mentioned trying to get the Carrie Mullis interview back on the radio, and I'd like to see the facts on AIDS creep a little more into the news. That's just my personal request.
All right.
To you.
I'll try and do that. I'll try to update, and it's certainly one of the interviews that I'm happiest to have been part of. So
now that it's labeled a national security issue by our government, in other words, AIDS in Africa is an American national security issue. That does not sound right to me.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
I just want to mention something about Timothy.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I have a very short section of a letter. A friend of mine who said he thought it was a good idea, that Timothy was killed, and I just said to him, I must say that it saddens me if you think that taking of any life can correct the previous taking of a life. I always look past the psycho-historical view that is spun for us daily.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to his last statement, a poem trumpeting mastery of one's own ship, Timothy McVeigh was never pulling any of his own strings from grammar school on. This sanitarily administered killing is synonymous with all public executions of the past, just without the mess. The administration agenda that gave his demented mind wheels and put the tools of death in his hands has a couple of projects. They would like to recruit out of the militias quote-unquote security personnel that can be trained for wider militarization of local police forces. They also want to keep their finger on the illegal access to atomic materials and maybe through reverse blowback work their way into foreign terrorist cells. The McVeigh snuff is pure political theater, something to jog satiated America a little out of their perpetual couch potato amnesia. So I just thought that might fit into what you're talking about tonight.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
This is Earthwatch. We have more calls and a marathon going on here at 212-209-2900. Every line is flashing. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, you know, I like your delivery, the way you talk on the air.
Hey.
You know, you sound so sincere.
All righty. Well.
And I don't like sarcasm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey.
Hey.
You choose a big fat nigger. Hey.
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 You're revealing your background,
you.
Aren't
hey.
You? How old are you?
Hey, I'm 22. Hey, how old are you?
And yet, you haven't been verbally trained to know that's inappropriate language.
Oh, it's not inappropriate where I live. Hey.
Hmm.
Really? Hey. Is it appropriate there? Hey.
Why do you think that's smart?
Why do I think it's smart? Which part? Hey. The part where I say that she's a nigger or the part where I'm making fun of you? Which part?
Which part do you think is smart?
I think they're both pretty smart, actually.
Hmm.
I think it's a lot smarter than your delivery,
mm-hmm.
your little swarminess that you've been doing for the last 15 years. I think that's...
Yeah. What kind of work do you do?
Yeah. What kind of work?